I'm ready. Good day. Welcome. We're here to talk about Puppet. Luke is here. Puppet is a way of actually getting our common activities to be described in a common way so that we don't have to worry about minor details like content and user ads across systems. Hopefully this is the solution we've all been searching for.
It is.
Thank you.
So like you said, I am here to talk about Puppet, but if there's one thing you should learn today, it's that SSH and the for loop just don't cut it anymore. Most of us are doing something to manage systems, but unfortunately the vast majority of what most of us do looks a lot like SSH and the for loop. And maybe you'll say, well, I use RDIST or I use rsync or I wrote this really complicated system so that I have XML RPC or whatever instead. But a lot of it looks a lot like XML RPC or looks like SSH and the for loop. And I did that for a long time. I spent a long time as a sysadmin using the simple tools and trying to build my own models on top of those simple tools. And you can get very far, but eventually you run out of room, or you realize that you can't share anything you have because you wrote it all and it works very well, but it has your domain name hard-coded in it, or it has a lot of assumptions that work great for you and work great for your company or your city or your state or your, you know, A-class IP space or whatever, but don't work with other people's assumptions. So eventually I started using higher-level tools, like CFEngine and ISConf and everything else that I could do, but most of the higher-level tools are pretty bad, and they, especially things like CFEngine, look very good at first, but almost no one ends up using CFEngine for very long before they start. I think the word is hating it, and so that's what I did for a long time. I was a significant member of the community, but the problem with CFEngine is that it's a very closed product, even though it's GPL, it's open source. The author doesn't really let you accept patches, or he won't really accept patches from you. And a lot of the other tools are basically meant that if somebody said, oh, I have a bunch of assumptions, I'm going to encode those assumptions into a product and then give you that product, and you can now make the same assumptions I do. And that's not really very useful because it's this monolithic product, and if you don't have 100% overlap between how you think about the world and how the author thinks about the world, then you're in trouble. So eventually I decided to step out on my own. I basically created my own product that hopefully won't have my assumptions in it, hopefully will allow people to make their own assumptions and encode those assumptions in a way that it's clear that it's an assumption. And we've got a lot of languages, and these languages are very good at allowing you to think about the world the way you want to think about it, and they don't force you to think about the world in one specific way. And I want Puppet to be a lot more like a framework, more like something that allows you to encode your ideas rather than a tool that has its own preconceptions of the world in it. Clearly Puppet does make some assumptions. Everything does. You do have to be able to do things like type and, you know, view output and stuff like that. But as much as possible, if I made an assumption that doesn't agree with your worldview, then that's probably a bug. It's not something that I designed in on purpose. And towards that end, Puppet isn't just open source, it's GPL, woohoo, but it's also a very open community. If you want to contribute, if you think something should work differently, and you're willing to work with me to figure out how it should work, it's one thing to stand up and say, well, it sucks. I mean, anybody can say that. I do every day. But it's another thing to stand up and say, this stuff, here's a way it could be better. And if you're willing to do that, and you're willing to, damn it. They have these things called clips.
Yeah.
At least we have them in the States. I don't know what it's like here, but I don't know that the tape will work any better on the badge, and I was afraid it would cause the badge to rotate, and then, you know, we'll try. So if you can come up with a better way of doing it, I will help you implement it, or I will help get it done. I don't think that I'm right. I just think that I'm trying. And that's the big problem, is that there aren't a lot of people trying. I would like to think that I'm competing with 50 other tools out there, because this is a huge problem. Everyone knows this is a problem. And yet there's no software out there. We've got 48 text editors, we've got 228 web browsers, and we've got no automation tools. We've got no tools to actually manage all this crap. So I'd like you to compete with me. If you think that I'm wrong, make your own tool, publish it, get people to use it. I'm not doing this because I think that I'm awesome. I'm doing this because I waited for 5 freaking years for somebody else to solve this problem, and no one would. So out of desperation, I'm trying to solve it myself. But I also know that I'm not very smart. So I want to build an ecosystem of tools that can all work together. If you don't like all of Puppet, Maybe you can use part of Puppet, because that's one of the big problems in the management community right now, is that if you decide, oh, well, I like the idea, I want to solve the problem, but I don't like this implementation. Today what you have to do is you have to do the whole stack yourself. If you don't like the functional layer, then you have to rewrite the language, you have to rewrite all the networking code, and you have to rewrite the functional layer. So I've written Puppet so that pieces of it can be replaced. I've got a functional layer that is kind of the core assumption, the core functional bits of the product. And if you don't like that, you can just replace that with your own functional layer. Or conversely, if you really like the functional layer, but you can't stand my language, or you hate XML RPC, or you don't like, you know, the color blue, then you can replace those bits with what you want. If you want to use Puppet's agent, but you want to do push, or you want to you like webmin, or you know your users can't stand command line things, and so they have to have a web GUI or something, you can do that. But please, start by copying, start by reusing my code or somebody else's code rather than start by building your own whole stack on your own. So the functional layer in Puppet, the bit that does all the work, is what I call a resource abstraction layer. And the goal of this layer is to hide things like what a user means on a given platform, what a package means on a given platform. How many here people actually care about how NetInfo works? Right. And so some people are going to say that they care about etcpassword, but you don't. You only think that you care about etcpassword because you're so used to thinking of etcpassword as containing those really, really important user bits. It's all a lie, though. All you really care is that the user's there. So if the user happens to be an etcpassword or dev null, you don't care. Is the user there? Does the user have the rights he or she needs? Okay, then shut up and leave me alone. So the idea behind Puppet is you can teach Puppet how to talk about these elements, how these resources in the way that is appropriate to that system, and then you can move on with your life. And then you're just talking about the resources and how they relate to each other and whether they should be on the system or not, rather than talking about what the file format of etcpassword is or what the argument order of user add, I mean PW, I mean NetInfo, I mean, you don't want to know about that. So the resource abstraction layer is actually written in two layers. The top layer is the resources themselves and the modeling of those resources. So I've got a user, it's got a UID, a GID, a comment. The UID has to be a number, the GID can be a number or a name. The comment, you know, could be whatever, but the shell has to be an actual fully qualified path, and it should probably exist. And so all these things that you want to do that are validation that need to happen at what I would call the modeling layer. And below that, you have what I call providers, which handle the bits on disk. So when you say a UID, that means that I call user mod dash m whatever, or dash u, the UID, blah. So somebody has to do that translation. So providers do that translation. And hopefully make it so you don't have to have your bookshelf look like that. Or if it does, it's all books that you want to read instead of books that you have to read. So an example of providers are the package providers, of which there are 18 right now. Most of them are related in some way. I've got dpackage. Well, nobody actually uses dpackage to do anything, do they? So I've got apt, and I've got aptitude. And if you wanted to do a synaptic one, it would probably be 20 lines of code. I've got RPM plus up-to-date plus yum. Slow as it is, it's there. And then there are things like gems, which work anywhere, or Darwin ports, which is not at all what Apple intends you to use, but nonetheless, you can use that to manage packages on your Mac. And the idea is that you should do as little as possible in the provider, because if it's shared information, it should be in that model. And like it says there, most of the providers are actually quite short. The absolute, out of the 41 providers that I have in the system right now, the longest one is 208 lines, and the shortest one is 10. So this is not a lot of code we're talking about. Most of it is either a direct wrap to shell commands, you know, user add, PW, whatever, or it's direct calls to APIs, like I can do for user information that's available via the built-in Ruby POSIX APIs. So that's pretty simple. So the layer above that, in terms of how Puppet thinks about the world, is a custom language that I wrote. And the idea behind this language is that as much as possible, it should be about specifying these resources and how they relate to each other and how they relate to the functions on your system. I don't want you to have to think about things like file paths or file formats or any of that, because it's all basically non-portable details that you don't actually care about. It's just that you're forced to know it. So this language allows you to talk about these resources in a way that just hopefully covers the things you actually need to know about. I've got a package. It's got a name. It should be installed. I've got a user. Here are the bits of the user. I want the user to be there. I've got a service. Please make sure it's running. And that's most of what the language is about. And yes, there are some things you have to do because consistency is not well loved in this world. So How many of you have a daemon on your system actually named OpenSSH? Everyone here runs SSH, right? What's your daemon name? SSHD, SSH, OpenSSH, OpenSSHD. I don't know what to call it, SSH. So Puppet will have some flexibility so that when you're stuck with that kind of situation where you've got the same thing with 27 different names, you can actually, Puppet has some kind of neat conditional structures to allow you to get around that problem. But fundamentally, this is what you want to talk about. I've got things. Make sure they're there. Make sure they look like this. Those things, as a collection, often have, they're related to some content, some concept. I've got SSH. Well, when I say SSH, what do I mean? Well, I probably don't just mean the service, because if I've got the service but not the package, I don't really have the service. If I've got the service but no config file, well, it's running, but it's not running the way I want it to run. So Puppet allows you to talk about the resources you really care about, and then talk about how they're related to each other. So here you say, the service actually depends on these config files. And that talks about this relationship, but otherwise, I don't know of any other tools out there that allow you to talk about these relationships. And they're kind of important. Like, they're not just a little bit important, they're actually quite important. And so it's a bit of a myth that other ones don't allow you to talk about this. And it's really quite important in Puppet that you be able to say, these things are related, and relationships can mean multiple things. Mostly it's make sure you create the user before you chain anybody to that user, because it won't work otherwise. But it also allows you to do things like restart services. If this file changes, I want you to restart the service. If you reinstall the package, I want you to restart the service. So those things are pretty important. Once you've developed this list of things you really care about, I've got my SSH, I've got my Solaris, I've got, you know, all my platform style classes, I've got my functional classes, I've got my location-based classes, then you take all those classes and you compose them into your final configuration. And these are complicated structures of what the system actually looks like. And the result is the list of all the resources that you care about in that system and how they relate to each other. You guys are looking pretty confused. That's clearly not a very good graph, very good picture. So one of the other bits that Puppet allows you to do is it gives you, one of the things that you're going to find is that there are a lot of details in your network that are different, like I was talking about, assumptions that you make that no one else makes. I only work in the 10-dot space. I don't have any publicly routable IP addresses. My domain is always this. I have a client who made up their own TLD, because why not? And they have their own DNS system that, you know, Bind works just fine, and that's a bit of an assumption. And it's one you're not going to encounter very often, and things work just fine, fortunately, because they were able to have all of that pulled out into reusable code. So in the language, Puppet allows you to define bits that you're going to do all the time and pull out the bits that are specific to your environment. So none of this, all of the bits related to getting an Apache virtual server set up, clearly the important things are the domain name, the host name it listens on, the IP address it listens on, and where the documents are. But that's the details you care about. All the bits on disk are actually, 10 or 100 times that amount of information. So you take the bits that don't vary per virtual host, you put them in a common reusable, function. Everyone has this, right? We're used to this idea. And then you can call that as many times as you want with as many virtual hosts as you want, and Puppet will deal with it correctly. Once you've got all of your node def, all of your classes and your definitions and your code and all that kind of stuff, all that's left is to basically say, for a given host, you should have these classes. And so in Puppet, you have node definitions, and the nodes are, my node name is X, and I have class A, B, C, D, and E. Because a lot of people already have host databases that have a lot of this information in them, I think I've talked to at least two people this week who have created their own comprehensive host database that they collect, they scrape information from the host and upload this to the server, and they do all kinds of complicated, interesting things. Almost everyone seems to have one of these, and no one has ever published them, and there is no common one that everyone uses. So you can actually tell Puppet to get its host information from some external tool. You can write your own small shell script that pulls that from the host database and provides it to Puppet. So you don't have to put all that in Puppet itself.
Can you do something similar with the user database? For example, with HR adds new employees, you have a feed from your
I would say that users are a bad example. So the question was, can you do the same thing with users? Can you load data from other sources for any of these pieces of data? And you could probably do that, but users are a perfect example of what you should not be using tools like Puppet for, and everyone does anyway. But the truth is that there's a very good tool called LDAP that works really, really well for users, and users are a complete pain in the ass. So, technically and physically, but if you have complicated needs like that, and I know that's not actually very complicated, but you can generate code in Puppet. You can't load other types of code right now, mostly because I think that would be a bad idea. I think that if you have that kind of thing, there are better solutions.
Well, but LDAP doesn't get it from your HR system either.
Right, but at least I don't have to solve you getting it from HR to LDAP. I mean.
So you're saying that's outside the domain of your of the problem you're trying to solve. That's okay.
I think user management. Yes, user management. Other than system users, I would say it's outside the domain of Puppet attempts. And even that, you can't currently manage passwords with Puppet. And part of the reason is because 99% of the users you're going to create automatically are not human users, they're system users. The human users, there is a very good solution. I know that none of you use LDAP. I know that none of you, you all find it much more convenient to SSH to machines and use userAd yourself. But LDAP really is the solution, and it really does work well. Of course, NetInfo worked great in 1988, and you know we still didn't learn our lesson. But yeah, that's a very good solution. So Puppet as a tool, it incorporates kind of the middle layer that was in that stack I showed earlier, which is all the networking. And the idea is that you've got a bunch of clients on your network, and this is where Puppet makes assumptions. I assume how you're going to use Puppet as a tool. You can reuse the language. You can reuse the libraries. But the language, the libraries, plus the networking code does have assumptions. This is the thing that I thought would be a good tool. And I wrote it in a way that I think will be useful. But if you don't like that, so you can use it right now and it is usable in production, but if you don't like that, you can reuse parts of it. So the tool itself, you've got a bunch of machines. Every half an hour or so, they contact the server and they say, hey, what should I look like? What should my configuration be? The server compiles a configuration for that client and sends it down to the client. The client goes, let's see, how am I doing? Compares the desired configuration against the real configuration and fixes anything that's broken. And most times, you haven't changed your configuration, the host hasn't drifted, so nothing really happens. But if something has happened, you've upgraded it, you've downgraded, you've outgraded, you've overgraded, or somebody accidentally removed executors, or somebody did whatever, Puppet will do its very best to fix all of those things. Towards that end, all Puppet configurations are idempotent, meaning you can run them multiple times, and they will only make changes if those changes are necessary. I'm not going to call user add every time you run Puppet. I'm going to check to see if the user is there. If it's there, if it's not there, I'm going to call user add. If it is there, but the UID is wrong, I'm going to call user mod. So I do everything I can to make it so you can run the configurations as often or as seldom as you want. I've got clients who run them as often as every 15 minutes, and I'm sure there are people out there who run them as seldom as once a day or once a week. I know a lot of people who use tools like this tend to run them pretty infrequently or run them only manually, so that they always want a user there to babysit any changes that happen to the system. I do have some reporting, so everyone loves RRD because it's great, and I do what I can to provide some feedback from the system so you actually know what the heck's going on. Reporting is one of those areas that you can always get better, and Puppet is no exception to that. I don't think a lot of people are using the reporting right now, which is, I think, the main reason why I don't get a lot of bug reports on it, but I expect that as people start using it more, it'll get better. I mean, this is the weird thing about open source, is you can write whatever you want, but if no one uses it, then it could be total crap, and you won't really know. I might say that I think this is great, but I don't think anybody's using it, so nobody filed bug reports, so it probably is crap until people start using it. Puppet is written entirely in Ruby, because Ruby kicked ass. I was a Perl developer when I started Puppet about 3 or 4 years ago when I wrote the prototype, and I tried to write Puppet in Perl, and I could not. And this was just when Python was kind of at its peak, or you know, everyone was talking about how great Python was. I tried to write Puppet in Python, but Python makes my eyes bleed, and so I could not. And in 4 hours, I went from having never seen a line of Ruby to having a functional implementation that I couldn't get working in Perl, which was my full-time job at the time. So that's pretty indicative of Ruby's power. I'm a big believer in test code. This is another thing that sysadmin tools don't really seem to believe in. I think most developers have now realized that if you test your code, sometimes it works better. I'm a big believer in that. A lot of my code base is test code. Unfortunately, I learned how to write test code while writing this project, so the later test code is significantly superior to the earlier test code, and no one likes refactoring test code. But I'm doing what I can to make sure it's very well tested. Yeah. And one of the other things is that you can drop new. If you write a custom type, if you've got, you know, I need to manage something that Puppet doesn't manage for you, you can drop that type into your Ruby tree and Puppet will load that automatically. So you don't have to modify the core or anything like that. There are about 8 different places where you can drop files in and Puppet will start using those files immediately without you having to tell it what to do or whatever. The current status of Puppet is that it's in production around the world, including here in Sydney. It's also in Germany and England and all over the US, probably in other places too, but those people haven't asked me for help and said, and I also live in X. So, but as I said earlier, this isn't, it's not just about Puppet. It's about solving this problem. Again, if the only thing you learn today is that SSH in a for loop isn't sufficient anymore, or anything that resembles SSH in a for loop isn't sufficient, I'm happy. Or if you come and you go, wow, this is a big problem, there's a lot of minimum data here, and that Luke guy, he's a dumbass, I can make a better tool, that's fine too. But try to solve the problem, use tools to solve the problem, stop letting humans solve all the problems. So, who here has, I have a poll, but who here has actually written software to manage computers for them in some way? Okay. So of that software, does anybody else outside your organization use that software? Okay. Why is that? Why is there that huge discrepancy? What is it about normal developers who write code and go, man, I kick ass. Everyone wants to use this, and they publish it. But sysadmins go, man, this is a total nasty hack. I'm going to hide this in the bowels of the system and never let anybody touch it.
We had a feature we wanted to add to the Linux HA high vulnerability stuff, and we didn't really know how to do it. But we knew some sysadmins who didn't know how to do it, and they'd written a nasty hack tool, and they gave it to us, and we made a better tool out of it, put it back. They tested it for us, and it worked. That process does work. You know, you get somebody who writes
right.
a nasty hack, they contribute to you, you say, that sucks.
Right, but the question is, why don't those guys who write the nasty hacks publish the hacks in the first place?
We want us to talk.
That's a lot of it.
No, I don't buy that, because the truth is that the work that I did publishing code that I wrote for other people had a significant impact on the quality of that code and how much it accomplished for me. I mean, this is the fallacy, I think, that a lot of sysadmins have. They say, oh, well, I don't have time to use automation. Well, why don't you have time? Well, because I sat at my computer for 12 hours yesterday and used the SSH in a for loop to do my work. That's why you don't have time. You have to spend a little time to make a little time. You have to spend a little money to make a little money. Well, it's the same thing with time. If you invest some time in your tools, if you invest some time in becoming better at your tools, then you will be a better sysadmin. You will go home on time. You will actually get a girlfriend someday. But if you just sit at your desk all day, it's not going to happen. So we really need to find a way to, as sysadmins or as people who manage software, because the truth is that a lot of people aren't sysadmins, but freaking everybody manages software. Everyone installs software. Did the software that you installed work exactly as you wanted it to the first time? No, it didn't. Well, why not? How hard was it to get your stupid computer to run the stupid software in the way that you wanted to? Could you take that same idea and rerun that in 10 other places? You know, or your mom calls up and says, wow, I really, you know, I need a web browser. And you go, oh, well, you should download Firefox, but then you need to tweak these settings and those things, you need to set this up and that other thing, and I'll be there in an hour. You had a question back somewhere? I agree with you, except that there isn't one.
Sorry.
So he's saying that there has to be a website where we can talk about this, where we can share our code, and where sysadmins can get together. And logic would require that, and reality denies it, unfortunately. I've actually tried to create that about 4 different times, and eventually, partially just because I'm a horrible web developer, but I could never get any traction behind it. I mean, ProLaunch.org is a perfect example of a site that is a very good collaboration tool for people who are only vaguely related to each other. I mean, they just use the same language. How much can they really have in common? Something like that for sysadmins I think would be excellent. I tried to create one and I was a miserable failure. So if anybody else wants to try. Yeah, we can, questions are great in the middle. I don't have any problem off the cuff, whatever.
To go back to your initial premise that sysadmins don't share code, I can say for myself the reason I tend not to share what I've written to manage our systems is because the contract that I signed with the company that I joined when I joined it is that if I write code to run on our servers, it belongs to my company, not to the world.
Right.
And so I can't. It's not that I don't think it's great, it's that I can't give it to other people.
And that is a common problem, but it's not a problem that other developers don't face either. So it's clear that a lot of developers write code as addendums to existing open source projects. And sometimes they can release that code and sometimes they can't. But a lot of how we've gotten to the point where we are in open source is that, first, in cases where we don't have those kind of restrictions, we do what we can to actually publish the code. And second, in cases where we do have those kind of restrictions, we do what we can to at least bring up the question. Is there something I can do to this code that will allow me to release parts of it, if not the whole thing? And I've actually had very good success at extremely conservative companies getting them to release one part of it. Ironically, I always find this very strange. I always think the companies will say, only if you release it with my name can you release it, because I want the fame from it. Instead, they say, only if you never mention my name ever can you release the code. Which is odd, but I'm willing to take all the credit. So it is a problem, but everyone else has that same problem. Every developer you talk to, every open source developer, except those rare people who work at universities, they have that problem. And they're finding a way to solve that problem. So some of us are clearly not going to be able to resolve that problem. If you work for Northrop Grumman, you ain't releasing your code. But, you know.
I was just going to say that there's organizations like Sage, which have their own website, which potentially could be leveraged to do this sort of thing.
And I've been a Sage member for 6 years or something, and I've been doing what I can to get those guys to do anything useful. And it has been a miserable, miserable failure. The organization as a whole, and I have to say, Sage.au, from what I understand, is significantly superior to Sage, but that's a pretty low bar. So I've really tried. People in the organization have tried, but the truth is that sysadmins are kind of addicted to who they are. They like the gunfighter thing. They like, you know, I'm all powerful, I'm all knowing, and I'm really lazy. I don't want to know anything. If you could just send me checks, that would be great. And sysadmins don't seem to like that. They want to know. The pager makes them happy. I mean, who? I don't get it.
I can tell you the reason we haven't released ours is because it's written in PHP. And it's the only thing we can find that integrates really easily with all the stuff we have.
Yeah, but I mean, what Webmin is a lot of PHP, isn't it? And that's one of three tools that most people have actually heard about in this space at all. And yes, everyone hates Webmin. Yes, they have good excuses for hating Webmin. But yes, Webmin actually makes people's lives a lot easier. So, and I've been at too many companies that, you know, at least you're using something. At least you're not SSH in a for loop. Of course, it looks a lot like SSH in a for loop. It's HTTPS in a for loop instead, but whatever.
Unfortunate, though, it is, like, for example, our office has a lot of different operating systems. I was just wondering how Puppet deals with that or whether there are plans for, you know.
What about operating? What now?
Well, our office, for example, runs, like, Linux boxes, Mac boxes, Windows boxes, that kind of stuff. And does Puppet deal with any of that, or is it plans to?
So Puppet does not support Windows right now because the models of these resources on Windows are going to be completely different. And because I've been fortunate to be in Unix world all my life, and so I did what I know, which is Unix. If somebody has $100,000 and wants to support Windows, it could probably happen, but or has a developer who really likes Windows and likes Ruby and wants to get it happening, it can happen. I'm not going to do it because I do stuff that I like to do, and that doesn't include running on Windows. But Puppet supports, I test it constantly on OS X, Solaris, FreeBSD, Red Hat, and Debian. And I know people are using it in production on Gentoo. I don't know if they're actually using Gentoo in production, but in the Gentoo boxes they care about, they're using Puppet. So if there's any Unix-like operating system that Puppet doesn't work on, the majority of the time the definition doesn't work is it doesn't support my package format or it doesn't support the correct arguments to user add or whatever. And in those cases, it's usually just a few lines of code to get a provider that works for you. And if you create that provider, I will definitely contribute that back to the core. I haven't run Gentoo in years, and I've got Gentoo providers because somebody in Spain has done the work to make it work, and it's very little code, and it works great.
Yeah, the agent, what language does the agent have to be written in?
So the agent right now is the Puppet functional agent that has all the layers and stuff, has all the resources. That speaks XML RPC over HTTPS right now, and at the moment it's using YAML. It uses a YAML dump of Ruby class. So it is text and you can do it, but it would be kind of annoying to do it in non-Ruby. I'm planning on switching to something more simple soon that will be probably XML for the complicated formats or something like that, so that it's easier, because right now it's possible, but it's not as easy, so it's easier for other languages to talk to it. If you want to replace the agent and you just want to use the language would take a little bit of work to generate other types of code, other types of systems, but there's no requirement that anything is written in anything else. If you want to load the library, it's written in Ruby. You have to be writing in Ruby. Otherwise...
Yeah, I was just wondering about other flavors of Unix. You know, HPUX, True64, there's still a bit of that floating around.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can run that. You can get Ruby on those, right? If you can get Ruby on there, then you can run Puppet.
Okay.
And that is a bit of a limitation, I know. Somebody asked me recently if I could get Puppet on some sort of AT&T Unix that hasn't been made since 1987, and I was like, well, if you can get Ruby on there and an internet, you know, Ethernet address, then... Oh, sorry.
Well, it's sort of on the same subject. How many people here have an issue with that it's written in Ruby, and how many people here know Ruby?
But how many...
To commit their entire system.
So here's the thing. I'm not wedded to Ruby. I wrote it in Ruby because language choice, in my opinion, is the first optimization. If you write... I wanted to write it in a compilable language, but I think C is really, really slow to write, and I don't enjoy writing in C. And I think Ruby is really, really fast to write, and I really like writing in Ruby. So it was a choice between taking 5 years and hating myself and writing in C, or taking, you know, 6 to 18 months and really enjoying it and writing in Ruby. And for that, it was like, well, I could never get it done, or I could get it done in a non-optimal language. And I think Ruby is non-optimal. I would like it to be compilable. I'd like you to load this library in any language you want. I expect probably I will re-implement the library itself in C or in some compilable language at some point, but not until I have 5 employees who can actually do that work.
I was just wondering about state sort of asking my first question. What version is it at? Is it changing a lot? I mean, yeah.
I just released 0.22 because I'm randomly picking version numbers. I managed to skip 0.21. I feel like it's getting pretty stable, and so I'm probably going to, you know, arbitrarily announce 1.0 at some point in the not too distant future. But I said this at this exact same time last year too, so who knows? I personally think I would like to have more core contributors. I'm doing the majority of the development, and then there are a couple more people who are doing bits and pieces, like the Gen 2 work, or there's somebody, people maintain the packages, and there are people who do bits of it, but not as much as I would like. I would like to have more people who knew the code better, as much as I do, before I was really comfortable that it was being really stable. But the version number is 0.22 right now, and it's relatively stable. Yes?
Just coming back to agents again, one issue we have with some of our larger customers is what we can and can't put on boxes for security reasons.
Right.
Also, working across different security domains, what protocols we can and can't punch through firewalls and so forth. So has anything been done in terms of the most ideal way to proxy into another security domain for those agents? And also, has anyone been working on a native agent